Welcome to the Bitches Be Brave podcast. We know how difficult and crazy it can be to juggle family, career, and not to mention make time for yourself as a busy working mom.
So it's time to get inspired and gain the tools to create a life you love. We are your hosts, Bev Steele
and Heather Hobbs.
Join us as together we motivate, inspire, and gain tools to thrive in all areas of life. Let's go.
Welcome back to this episode of Bitches Be Brave. And today is a hot topic of sex. We interview Jana Denton Howes, who's a sex and intimacy coach. And these conversations are always interesting.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've had this topic on our podcast. And it's like anything, it's like one of those parts of our lives that if we do not focus on it and make it a priority, what happens? It goes away. So I did say on the podcast that I'm going to focus on that now.
Tonight. Yeah. Tonight. Well, I think it's, you know, we say this, that I just think during this time, I mean, there's a little extra stress. Everybody's kind of got, you know, the stress of working from home or kids schooling from home or being home so much. And, I just think it kind of throws your normal routine out of whack. And what she had said, if, you know, if there was any sort of problem there or, you know, stress or anything to begin with, I think all of this that we've been going through has kind of magnified it. So it's a good, I mean, it's always interesting, I think, because our sex lives is part of the whole, you know, self-care. And are we taking care of us and what we need to help relieve our stress and make us a better person and help our relationships? I mean, it's just part of the whole piece. And I think it's an important one that oftentimes can easily get overlooked.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you're looking at your watch while you're having sex saying, okay, when is this going to be over? You're probably not leading that experience. So you'll want to listen up today.
You guys will enjoy it. And she has some great free offerings that you'll find out we will have in the show notes as well. So take a listen.
Here we go.
Welcome. We are here today with Jana Denton Howes, who's a shameless mom to two daughters and marriage coach who is pioneering a movement for women to free themselves from sexual expectations and redefine intimacy in their marriages. Affectionately called the Chief Libido Officer and Husband Whisperer by her participants and coaching clients, Jana not only helps married women take sex off their to-do list, but she shows couples how to transform conflict into connection in 5 seconds or less. That sounds super exciting. Jana, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you. It's such a blessing to be here.
Well, we are so excited to talk to you about this topic, which, you know, we've talked sex a couple times on the podcast, but I have to say, I think in this, like, 5 months into COVID is a very, a very applicable time to be talking about this right now, because we've all been cooped up with kids and husbands for so long. But I'd love for you to tell your story and how you came about to be a sex expert and husband whisperer.
Let's see. We should talk to my husband if I'm actually a husband whisperer or not. But when I got married really young, when I was 17, actually, and I wasn't pregnant and I wasn't in some cult or anything like that. It just worked out for me. I didn't expect sex to be the main thing that we fought about. I thought it would be communication or maybe money or maybe child rearing, but I didn't find myself wanting sex very much and not really enjoying it, being very confused. I don't think I even knew I had a clitoris for like the first year of my relationship. No surprise, we're so poorly educated as women. And so it was about 5 years in that we thought we are fighting too much about this. He wanted it a lot and I just didn't want it. And so we went and saw our first counselor. It was very awkward. It was this tiny little room, no windows. He asked me about masturbation and I was freaking out. But that started me on the journey that lasted about, I'd say, 12 years. I've been married for almost 20 years now, of, you know, looking for books for help, workshops, other professionals, and nobody really could give me any advice beyond just do it. It's good for your marriage. take a bath. Mm-hmm. I mean, I tried supplements. I'd got my testosterone levels checked. I tried everything. But through the process, I became a trained marriage coach because I just got excited about relationships and we had gone through so much support for it. And that's when I decided to buckle down and really fix this issue for myself. And it worked. And now I help hundreds of other married women do the same.
Wow. I just can't get over that you got married at 17, having three daughters. I'm like, wow, that is so young. And your brain really is not fully developed yet. So I can just only imagine you trying to tackle that as a young married woman. And there's so much that you still needed to learn and grow. So amazing that you are a support to other women out there. And we do have a wide range of ages that listen to this podcast. So I'm so happy that you're on. So Heather and I, the reason we started this podcast is that we're always like reading and learning about the new thing. So I can see if we were to attack this, we probably would be listening to podcasts and, you know, sharing articles and things like that. So it sounded like you searched out a lot of different things. Can you kind of share what those were and what was the trigger that made you say, gosh, you know, this is not the path. I need to kind of figure this out myself.
Well, unfortunately, there actually isn't very much out there for women with this struggle. And so I found a few books, The Sex Starved Marriage by Michelle Weiner Davis, Come As You Are by Emily Nagoski, both great books. But they were too broad. And they also didn't give me exactly the type of permission that I needed. And that's really, when it really boils down to it, that's what I needed. I needed permission to create clear boundaries in my relationship so that I could actually say yes. I needed to learn how to say no first. I needed permission to prioritize my pleasure in the sexual experience, but also outside of the sexual experience. I needed permission to connect with my body for like the first time ever, to look at my vulva in a mirror, to overcome religious shame that I would have been stuck with. Yeah. So much, I needed radical permission, and that's what I give women. And nobody was really willing to step over that line and give me it. They wanted to diagnose me or pathologize what I was going through. And trauma is definitely something that women go through, and it's not something to breeze over. But I think that all women need safety, regardless of if you've had a traumatic experience in the past or not. So I focus a lot on safety as well.
Because I was going to ask, I mean, how much of this comes from our upbringing, right? So you mentioned religion. I mean, I think I was raised in a religion where you save yourself for marriage, and I didn't quite believe in that. But I think, you know, it does a number on you, because even if you, if you choose to not go by that, I think there's guilt, there's shame, there's, you know, you feel that it's just, you're doing something sinful, and it's, you know, I think that weighs on you so much. And so how much of it is, you know, I think religious based, or even just how you were raised and your morals and values that just get kind of, you know, cemented into your brain?
Oh, so much. And the thing is, we as women blame ourselves. Mm-hmm. The question I ask myself all the time is why, or what's wrong? Like, why is this happening? And I thought, for sure, it's hormonal, for sure. Or maybe I'm just not sexual enough, or but really, yes, it goes on to the shame that is triggered through childhood messaging. Whether you're religious or not, there's a lot of don't look, don't touch messaging. Whether that's overt, like whether it's actually said, don't touch your body, go to your room, or, you know, we don't do that around here. Or if it's just, no one's ever talking about it. That gives a message as well, too. A lot of the women that I serve do come from religious backgrounds. And, ooh, man, that's a tough one to overcome, because that's the good or bad. And that's fear-based. Mm-hmm. Then we also live in this weird culture of over-sexualization of women. So we have this lack of education on the one hand. Like, a lot of women don't even know they have two holes. Mm-hmm. There's a urethra that's where your pee comes out, and then your vagina, that's where, you know, your period and the babies and the penis, like that's all around that. And women in their 40s don't even know that. It's just mind-boggling, but it's actually not, because we're never taught it. So you have that miseducation on the one hand, and then you have this over-sexualization on the other, which tells women that their bodies are for men's pleasure. Their bodies are for performance. Their bodies are for selling things. I mean, porn represents 30% of the internet transactions. And most porn is very violent, degrading, and absolutely over-sexualizing a female body. So it's not our fault. That's what I want everyone to know. It's not our fault. It's society.
Yes. And I might add to that, that I think that there's a lot of men out there that don't know that we have two holes either. So for those men listeners out there, you know, it's amazing that you just reminded me of a day that I was watching sports with my husband after I had my first daughter. And I had never even noticed while you're watching football, how many commercials there were exploiting women. But I had a completely different perspective. And I would tell my husband, I'm like, you know, you're a father of a daughter. Are you okay with this? And it hadn't really even occurred to him as well. So even those messaging, that is such a great point.
What we do in the Wanting It, I run a program called the Wanting It More program. And what we do right away is we go on a media detox. And what happens is that you start to become aware of what's going on. You go down, you walk in the mall and you see the lingerie, the big, huge poster of the woman in this sexual position, wearing things that are so uncomfortable for her. You see it everywhere. You see it on billboards. You see it, you hear it on the radio. It's crazy. We're the frogs in boiling water, and absolutely it affects our sex drive.
Yeah.
I mean, I think one of the things too, that you watch, if you look at movies, you look at TV shows, and sex is always, you know, this like either totally passionate, heated, you know, super like ends like amazing. And, you know, everything's so great. And I think that, you know, especially in the beginning of a relationship, it can be like that. But then you fast forward to, you're like, quick, we have 5 minutes, why SpongeBob is on downstairs or whatever it is. And it becomes like this kind of needed, quick, you know, very unromantic, you know, non really spontaneous type of event. And, you know, then eventually I think it becomes even worse. You know, I think, I mean, it's almost like the older they get, then the more they want to barge in or the more they're calling for you all the time. So it just becomes not that fun movie type of sex anymore. And I think that is a lot of times where women who've been married for a long time probably start to just become more disinterested or busy. I don't have time for that. And so how, which I think is a little different than the psyche piece that we were just talking about, but how do you coach women and couples, especially in that really busy time of your life where you're like, I just don't feel like I even have time for that?
I think the most important thing, well, there's a couple, and I'll share all of them with you. But the idea is that when you cross the threshold of the bedroom, I'm just using the bedroom as an example. You may want to have sex other places. I'm like a bedroom, like my own sheets, comfort kind of gal. But when you cross over that threshold and you're thinking about the sexual experience, it's like you have to become somebody else. You're not allowed to be exhausted and tired and maybe feeling a little under the weather, or have a million to-dos running through your head. You're not allowed to be a mom anymore. That's total BS. You are a woman. You are a sexual woman outside of the bedroom, and you're a mom inside of the bedroom. You are a whole sophisticated woman. And when we think about sex in terms of performative, and you nailed it, Heather, when you said that, because that's what we do think of sex as. We need to sound sexy, look sexy, be sexy. That has nothing to do with our pleasure. That has to do with what we look like. The most important thing is to transform that concern into how does it feel like? So it doesn't matter what you're wearing unless it feels good. It doesn't matter what you do or say unless it feels good. And in that way, sex can become a self-care practice, something that provides you energy, gives you nurturing, a place that you run to when you are exhausted, not something that you have to think, I have to be at tip-top shape in order to enjoy it. And in that way, then you don't dread it. You look forward to it. And for goodness sakes, just schedule sex, because schedule sex and get a lock for your door and tell your kids that you have sex, because then if they barge in and they see something, you've already started the conversation and you don't have to worry about it. You're like, yep, that's what married people do. And you're going to do it too when you're married as well.
I have a friend who's like, you only touch a hot oven once, you know? So once they walk in, once they're not going to do that again.
Now you don't have to worry about it. Yeah, I always say I like the scheduling sex. The more you have it, the more you want it. I feel like it's kind of like candy for me. The more candy I eat, the more candy I want.
It's true. Yeah, at least weekly. I find if it goes more than a week, women will really just forget. But it's not just about scheduling sex. It's about scheduling an experience that you can genuinely look forward to. And when I tried to schedule sex before I did that, it was a disaster, because it just increased my anxiety around the sexual experience. So that's where the boundaries come in.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the comment Heather made about not feeling sexy. You know, I would suspect that's more of our issue as a woman, that the man isn't really looking at the fact that you have a stretch mark or that you maybe feel a little bloated today. How do you help women specifically get out of their head and not know that, and really trust that their husband isn't expecting them to look like that cheerleader on the NFL field?
It's really through vulnerability. I think anything good is through vulnerability. Telling your husband that that's how you're feeling, asking for reassurance, not just once, but multiple times, all the time, every sexual experience. I'll ask for reassurance. It's like a, you know, dirty talk. People talk about dirty talk. My dirty talk is like, are you proud of me? Do you think I'm a good mom? Mm-hmm. Do you think I'm beautiful? Do you adore me? Do you cherish me? They're our life partner. That's who they're around. Like, they're around to cheer us on. So if we are trying to put on a mask, that's not really intimacy. So I think that, and then also give yourself whatever you need. If you need the curtains drawn, if you need the lights out, if you need to wear special clothes, if you need sheets on, if you need a robe, if you need candlelight, like anything you need, don't feel like you're not like an empowered woman, because you want to feel comfortable.
So how do you breach the subject? Because I would imagine that in a lot of couples, you see things differently, right? Or there's one person, like you even mentioned in your marriage, that, you know, there's usually one person who maybe wants it more than the other person. So one person is feeling slighted, the other person feels like, back off, you want too much. So how do you like bring this up and say, okay, like, I think we need to fix something? You know, how do you address that? Because without hurting the other person.
So good. I address this a lot. Here's where the husband whisper part comes in. So a big caveat is if a husband has a pornography addiction, if his brain has been altered in any way by porn, this is a difficult conversation. And that's why I really encourage women to ask their husbands to stop. My husband had a 15-year porn addiction that I didn't know about. And when that was uncovered, when he was courageous enough to tell me, I was courageous enough to ask the direct question, and he healed, it took about a full year, he completely transformed in the bedroom. Absolutely, physically transformed, the way he was able to control himself, the desires he had, even his sex drive was totally transformed. So that's a huge caveat there. But if we're dealing with a beautiful husband brain, I mean, they're all beautiful, that hasn't been affected by porn, then they want to make you happy. They really do. They don't know how you're feeling unless you tell them. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know this was going to happen when I first started this, but there are a lot of women who force themselves to have sex like 3 times a week, and their husbands never know for like 13 years that they are not fully into it. So yes, it's a shocker. It can be, if you haven't been fully honest. Again, it's not your fault, because women are told not to be completely honest about this. And so you always want to go back to This is what's going to make me happy. This is what feels uncomfortable, and this is what feels comfortable for me. And then at some point, you got to let them have their own experience and detach yourselves from their emotions and know that you're never going to be able to have a wonderful, healthy sex life if you don't set your boundaries. It's impossible. And he can't do it for you. When I was first really giving myself this radical permission, and this is before I knew my husband had a pornography addiction. We didn't find out for a couple years later, but I sat him down on the bed. I wrote out a script because I was terrified. And I basically said, I'm never going to have sex again unless I want to. Mm-hmm. And he went through the range of emotions with that one. He was furious. He was sad. He was scared because it's so linked to attachment for men, feeling important. I slept at a friend's house that night. It was the closest we ever got to breaking up. But we got some SOS help from a counselor, and I stood my ground. And from that day on, I never have sex unless I really want to. And I schedule it. So sometimes I just, you know, put on my running shoes and take on my yoga mat, you know, and I just go into the experience. I also lead the experience. So I teach women to be the leaders and men to be the responders. And in that way, safety is always there for women.
So is it okay to sometimes want that movie experience? Like, I really like romance and being wooed. And sometimes I feel a little bit guilty about that because I think, well, you know, it can't always be that, but why not?
Why not? The only thing is to be really specific with him. Be like, don't just say, please, like a romantic evening. Well, he doesn't know what that is, right?
Yeah.
Like really specific. Like, can you wear this shirt and put on this cologne and bring me these kind of flowers? Like, I like wild flowers. I do not like red roses, for example. Can you get dinner takeout from this location? Can we sit by the fireplace and talk about our love? And that way, it doesn't mean any less. It just means that he wants to make you happy. And that's actually how mature romance is. That's really, the movies are kind of a lie in that sense. Mm-hmm. And you have autonomy. You have knowledge about your desires and body that he just will never really know.
So I want to go back because you talked a lot about, you know, tell your kids that you have sex, or tell your kids. And we've talked a lot about how what happens in childhood can really affect the adult. And so, you know, Bev's a mom of three daughters. I'm the mom of two sons. And what can we do to put them on the right path for a good, you know, for my sons to be not only enjoying sex, but to make sure that they're putting their women and wives in their lives, you know, first and vice versa. And so what can we do as parents that can help build a healthy sex life for our children? Which I hate to say that makes me at this point, but no. At the same time, I know it's part of them and their future happiness. So.
And you're feeling a little uncomfortable right now. I can feel it.
Well, like talking about like, my children having sex, you know, it's funny. My son just went to the doctor today. I'm like, he does not need the HPV vaccine. No, but that's part of like, as we're having this conversation, it's me saying, no, you're not going to have sex. I don't, you know, and I think that, so that kind of rang true for me of like, how do I fix some of how I was raised of like, no, no, no to sex, to creating a healthy environment for them?
Well, just by asking that question, you're on a wonderful path. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes. Permission for it to feel really awkward and really uncomfortable. We don't have guides. We don't have mentors. None of us probably had like really open, engaging parents who talked about clitorises and wet dreams and erections, no. Right? Like we just probably didn't have that. So we're actually the first generation who is changing this. So kudos to us, right? Good job, us. I think the first thing is to heal yourself a little bit, to see that your body is beautiful and natural and it's safe. And also maybe because you did have a religious upbringing, really tackling those messages that sex is dirty and like, shut it down, you know? Your sons and your daughters, my daughters, they're sexual beings right now. They were sexual beings the moment they were conceived, right? And you know, the more we can talk about it with ourselves and read about it and educate about it, then it becomes a little bit more natural for it to come up in everyday conversation. So, like, I'll give you some concrete examples. My daughter recently asked me, Mom, and I don't know where she found this out, whatever, I'm not going to freak out. Mom, do you suck Dad's penis? And I have a moment there, right? It was the same moment when she says, okay, yeah, but how does the sperm get to the egg?
Yeah.
There's a moment where I can choose a couple of different paths. I can choose a, whatever, like, where did you hear that? We don't talk about those things. Or there is a moment where I can just say, yeah, I do sometimes. And she's like, ew, that's disgusting. It's so gross. And I'm like, well, he cleans. And I only do it when I really want to. It's my choice. But yeah, that is part of our sexual experience. And she runs out of the room, makes gagging noises, and goes tell her sister. But I want her to know that from me, right?
Yeah. I could just picture the conversation between the sisters after that conversation is why I'm laughing.
They're very well educated, but that I'm not an expert in talking to kids about sex, but if there's any advice out there is to protect our children is to give them education. And there was a study done. Oh, I hope I don't mess this up, but it was between, I think it was in the Netherlands and the States. And they took the same group of college level women at similar social and economic backgrounds, similar religious understanding. And they saw that the women, I think it's in the Netherlands, one of these more progressive countries around sex, these girls were having less negative consequences in their sexual experiences. So less STIs, less teenage pregnancies, less rape, less, negative experiences. And the girls in the States, and they found out that both sets of parents were talking about the negative consequences, but the parents in the Netherlands were talking about the pleasure that can come from the sexual experience. They were talking about orgasms and clitorises and how they should expect it to feel good. And that was not leading them to run out and have a whole bunch more sex. No, that was actually leading to them being safer in the sexual experiences that they were having.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just, as you're talking, I was thinking, you know, it is very confusing, I think, for our kids right now, just with their sexual orientation. I mean, I think that my children's generation, they're just so open and accepting, you know, of, you know, whatever, you know, you desire. If you, you know, if I'm a woman and I like women and I like men, whichever. All good with them. However, when they're going through their development and they have questions, I think that it's really important that we be ready, because we weren't as open or raised with such open-mindedness. So do you explore that with your clients, or, you know, how would you recommend addressing some of those conversations with your kids?
Well, it doesn't come up a lot with the women I serve, because we're mostly talking about how to want and enjoy sex more for themselves.
Yeah.
The talk about children is kind of a side conversation. Usually it's a 2-month long program, usually towards the end, you know, and we're all like re-educated. And my stance on that, I mean, everyone has different beliefs when it comes to this, but my stance is really around the non-judgmental attitude that I am showing them. So if they want to talk about so-and-so they watch on YouTube, who is non-binary, or they're learning all these language, the main message I want to share with them is a non-judgmental approach, that anybody has the right to make a decision about their lives, regardless of what our beliefs are. So you know, and if one of them came to me and said, you know, mom, I'm attracted to girls, I would approach it with the same method. This is a non-judgmental approach, that she is an independent person who's going to make her own investigations about her life. And what is my role as a mom? My role of mom is to kind of help her out of the nest, really. And mm-hmm. she's going to have to navigate those things on her own.
Yeah.
So going back to kind of the couple and desires, I know, you know, you have a course and you focus on the four desire fixes. So I'd love for you to tell us about that and how we can work that into relationships and getting desire back.
So the first one is, I feel like you've touched this on this theme in your podcast before. It's prioritize your pleasure. And that's just a second of closing your eyes when you're drinking that cold water and noticing the sensations in your mouth. This isn't big stuff. This is the little minute, the moment I spent this morning. I opened up my bedroom window. I popped my head out. I smelt the fresh grass. I looked at the blue sky. And then I went about my day. We're so much in a pleasure deficit as women. And we also have immense capacity for pleasure as women. It's so living in a patriarchal world, we haven't been encouraged to develop this amazing muscle that we have. And it just takes a little bit. And then in that way, when you've scheduled your, I call them exploration dates, mm-hmm. your sexual experience, then you're not coming into it at like negative 120. You're coming into it with some of your pleasure tank being full. Because it is tough to transition from no pleasure into sexual pleasure. That is a really tough transition. And then because you've developed these skills within the sexual experience, now you know how to extract pleasure from your husband's armpit. I know it sounds weird, but just smell your husband's armpit. Pheromones! Or like, you know, you can slow it down. You can really savor the moment because you've been savoring moments outside of the bedroom. Then trust what feels good and what doesn't is the second path. We have immense capacity with our intuition as women. And we have been told for so long what a sexual experience should look like. We all know the formula, right? You get into bed, you undress, or you wear something sexy. You guys can't see my air quotes. There's a lot of air quotes over here. You start to kiss passionately. Always the hand needs to be on the neck. If you watch any sex scene, there's a formula. Then the genitals need to get involved, and then penetration must happen, and then everyone needs to have an orgasm, and it must be simultaneous. Otherwise, it's not like adequate or something. But really deconstructing the sexual experience to be more about little moments of pleasure, moments of intense feelings, and then moments of like a break. I always say like I need naps throughout my sexual experience because mm-hmm. I'm a highly sensitive person. I can't get overstimulated. So trusting what feels good and what doesn't through the process is absolutely critical if you want a good sexual experience that you can look forward to. Should I continue?
No. Yeah. I mean, I just want to comment that I think so much going back to number one, first of all, to me, the word is self-care that we use all the time. Right. And it's like, if you don't fill your bucket, you have nothing left to give to anybody else. And, you know, I think that's such a key point right there that, yeah, if you are feeling just depleted and, you know, and I look back to, we talked a little bit about, you know, just exercise, but just the endorphins that you get from exercise. And it's funny how like I can go a couple days and if I don't work out, I feel like the biggest, grossest, you know, puff a lump ever and like don't want to be seen. And then I can go work out and like, or just do a few sit-ups and feel transformed, right? And feel like, oh, I can like walk around this room. So I just think that comes into it. So I love that you kind of put prioritizing your pleasure, but prioritizing yourself, is so key. And so I love that so far. You know, how often, and I want you to get to 3 and 4, but I want to know, like, when you look at your clients, you know, what are the biggest issues that they come up with? Like, out of these 4, you know, is there one that really is a priority that comes up so often for your clients?
That's a great question, because this is actually a quiz. So I see the quiz results on the other end, and prioritize your pleasure is number one result that by far that women get. Then you have create clear boundaries, which we're going to get to next. Then you have connect with your body, which is the last one. And then trust what feels good and what doesn't. So in that order, I see the results for these women, thousands of women. So it's a good what would you say in research terms? I don't even know the fancy word. Lots of people go through it, so you have good data.
Yeah. Well, I love how you talk about slowing down, because even just going through these with you, it makes me want to pause and kind of think that I really believe that I, you know, we just spend so much time just checking the box. Like, I exercise, check. Did I have sex, check. And, you know, you're really not thinking about that experience. And as you said, like, being in that moment. And can you talk just a little bit more? You talked about going outside and looking up, but how you actually help us get in the moment to really enjoy that time and not just be like, I want to be a good wife and I'm going to have sex with him tonight because I'm a good wife.
Mm-hmm. I think the reframe of sex is good for me is absolutely necessary, because otherwise it's a need that you're providing. And then you're not going into the experience expecting it to be good for you. So when I was really first starting to do this, and I watched my participants go through this as well, it's a real mindset shift. And you wouldn't think it would be. We think we'd all be thinking sex is good for us. But no, we deep down we're like, this is, oh, fine. Okay, maybe I'll have an orgasm. Maybe it'll feel okay. But it's not. So yeah, sex is good for me. Okay, if sex is good for me, what does my sexual experience need to look like if it's good for me? Well, for me, it involves a lot of talking. I need to talk a lot. I talk all throughout our experience mostly, unless it's really physically pleasurable and I can't talk. But I want to talk about my work. I want to talk about his work. I want to talk about the kid's birthday party. I just want to talk.
While you're having sex?
Yes.
I was going to say my husband would love you if you're a talker, but that's not what he wants to hear.
My husband would go, stop talking.
Why? Who said that we have to stop talking? I'm a woman and I like to connect. I touch him, giving a hand job. We don't have really great words for this, but caressing him. I don't even know. I mean, I do this for a living and I'm like, I don't even know how to say these things, but I'll be like caressing him and I'll be like, yeah, talking about like Facebook ads or whatever. And he'll be like, bless his heart. I mean, he's trying.
You can say whatever you want.
Yes, right? But I get my connection needs met. He gets his connection needs met all at the same time. And there's no performance there. So I sometimes get into a real rhythm. And I see this with the participants as well. There are some women who do the same thing every single exploration date. They have their positions. They have the vibrator they like. They have the routine. And it works great for them. And I definitely get into those stages, but I like to follow my pleasure, kind of just like a choose your own adventure book. Did you guys ever read those as a young one? And it's like, okay, well, I'm going to start I like to lay on him naked. I'm going to start by doing that. And we're going to breathe together. I like that too. Breathe in and out, in and out. Maybe I'll talk to him about something that's on my mind. The budget will pop up and I'll just be like, okay, we got to do this. Yes. Okay, good. Back to breathing together. Then maybe my vulva will be like, I'm here. Like, hello. And I'll feel some tingly sensations. And then maybe it'll pop into my mind. Oh, like, I kind of want to try this position. I want to touch my clitoris. Do I want him in me or not? Yes, I do. Okay. Let's try that. No, that's not really working. I'm a little triggered because it's not working. Let's go back to the cuddling. Let's go back to talking. Let me listen to his heartbeat. I mean, I could keep on going on and on.
Yeah.
But that's what it's like. It's if you're leading and he's responding, women are sophisticated sexual beings. We are amazing. And men, like your husbands, they just want you to be in your pleasure. When you're in your pleasure, they are so happy. They love it because they're getting all of that feedback from you. And they're feeling like a good man, a good husband. And it's just like the best thing in the whole world. And I went from somebody who hated sex. I went through two periods of a year each where I had no sex at all. So wow. This works. If it worked for me, it can work for other women as well.
And she's beaming, everyone, if you could see her right now.
She's glowing.
I'll have what she's having.
Yeah. Well, I would love, I know you have a new seminar coming up. And so I'd love for you to tell our listeners about what you have available and how they can find you and get a hold of you.
Sure. So this is really great timing because I only do this 3 times a year. So wonderful. The free class is called The Real Reason for a Lack of Desire and the 6-Step Solution for Reconnecting Again. You can sign up. There's 3 different times you can do it. It is a live class. So we stay on sometimes for 2 hours. I mean, the class is only 1 hour and you can leave afterwards. But the coolest part is the last bit where you realize you are not alone. Women get vulnerable and open and I answer questions. I just love my work so much. So you can go to janetdentonhiles.com/free class and register there.
Okay, we'll definitely put that in the show notes and you may just see Heather or I on one of those.
I hope so. If I see your name, I'll be like, are you that Bev?
Yeah. The one and only. And we always ask our guests, what does it mean to you to be brave?
Hands down, being vulnerable. Mm-hmm. That's the most courageous things I've ever done in my life. Number one, coming out as a sex coach. Believe me, that's no easy feat. Talking to my brother, around asking him, do you love me? One of the most courageous moments of my life. Talking to my sister-in-law and telling her of all the preconceived notions I've had in the last 19 years. I mean, I could tell you on and on, absolutely the bravest moments I've had are when I've just told the truth.
I love that.
So good. Well, thank you so much. And thank you for all that you do. And I know our listeners are going to love to check out all that you have available. So this was great talking to you. Thank you, Jana.
Thank you.
I think I'm going to have sex tonight, by the way. Bye-bye.
Bye. Hey guys, we're just taking a quick break to tell you about an amazing new wine that we just discovered. You guys know that nobody loves a glass of wine more than we do, but when we learned what is actually in the wine that we were drinking, we were shocked. No wonder we were getting headaches, brain fog, and having trouble sleeping.
That's right, Heather, but then we discovered dry farm wines. Dry farm wines are organically crafted, unprocessed wine free of sugar, additives, and lower in alcohol. These wines are amazing, and they're better for our bodies and our planet. Now we can enjoy the pleasure and euphoria of wine without the negative effects of higher alcohol consumption.
To find out where you can try these amazing wines and get a special Bitches Be Brave discount, click on the link in our show notes below.